Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Renergen IDC conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity to ask questions later during the conference. If you should need assistance during the call, please signal an operator by pressing star and then zero. Please note that this call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Stefano Marani, CEO of Renergen. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much. Good morning and welcome, everybody, and thank you very much for taking the time to attend our press conference along with the IDC. First and foremost, sincere apologies for the technical glitches, but finally we managed to get them sorted out, so we're online. And without further ado, by way of introduction, obviously from the Renergen side, is myself, CEO Stefano Marani, along with Nick Mitchell, our COO. And then from the IDC side is Thembisile Salman, who was a deal principal instrumental in making this transaction happen, and Hilton Lazarus, who represents and is head of the chemicals division at the IDC. So thank you and welcome. We've got a brief presentation which is loaded up onto the web and sent through to the press prior to this conference call. So just to give you a little bit of an introduction and a recap on Renergen and exactly what it is that we're about. So as you may recall, in June of 2015, Renergen listed as the country's first primary listed SPAC. From there, we completed our first viable acquisition by November of 2015, and that was an acquisition of 90% of the shares in a company called Moloko South Africa. Moloko was rebranded to Tetra4, so when I speak throughout this conference, I'll be speaking on behalf of our subsidiary Tetra4. Tetra4, obviously as the country's first and only onshore petroleum production right, has managed to achieve an enormous number of milestones since the time that we took over the company to now. And this was all done with the initial capital that was injected through the listing of the SPAC. So some of the highlights to date was the conclusion of a helium take-or-pay agreement, which we concluded with Linde, which is an international global gases company and the world's largest helium trader. We completed construction in what could be considered a record time. We commenced construction in December and went online with production of the country's very, very first domestically produced upstream natural gas in May of 2016. That included design, construction, and commissioning, which was an exceptional feat. That operation went into play and started supplying natural gas to Megabus in the area. Megabus is obviously a division of Unitrans Passenger, which is part of the CAP Industrial Group. And we're very proud to say that to date, that pilot project has now covered a grand total of 800,000 kilometers, and the results have been incredibly positive. In 2016, in October, we updated our reserve statement following a significant amount of geological work that we'd done. And from there, we managed to show a new proven, or P1, of around 33 billion cubic feet, which in layman terms is approximately equivalent to 1 billion liters of diesel. And obviously, the upshot of that was that the valuation on the back of that P1 and P2 now puts the company at an inferred valuation of around the 6.6 billion rand mark, or 77 rand a share, roughly. Renergen's assets, we've got Tetra4 as the primary asset in South Africa. In addition to that, we're in the process of developing a hydroelectric scheme up in the Ivory Coast. We have finished the pre-feasibility study, and we're now going through the motions of completing the feasibility study, following which we'll then be able to enter into negotiations with the government surrounding a PPA. All right, a little bit more about Tetra4 and the reason for why we're here today. So Tetra4 is a completely vertically integrated natural gas company. Now, this is fairly unique in a number of respects. Unlike the majority of the majors, where their primary focus is on extraction and potentially refinery liquefaction and then selling of the liquid, in our case, we have ownership of the entire value chain. We have ownership of the upstream activity. In other words, we drill, we explore, we extract the gas. We then refine it, we compress it, and then we deliver it to our customers, meaning that we get the uplift of the entire value chain, literally from cradle to grave. And our primary focus areas from a business perspective, the core focus for management moving forward is now loosely defined in four major areas of advancement. The first is looking at power generation, and this is small-scale power and combined heat processes for industrial customers. There you obviously get the benefit of using the gas to primarily drive the engine, and then the heat from the exhaust goes towards creating steam, and that obviously kills two birds with one stone, i.e. from an environmental perspective, you're not using two different fuel sources to create the same amount of energy. Here you're getting both bites from the same cherry. So from an environmental perspective, it's a lot cleaner. Notwithstanding the fact that gas is also significantly cleaner than coal and liquid fuels. Industrial users, the main focus over here for the company is to look at customers in our footprint, in our catchment area, and to substitute LPG and other liquid fuels in burners with a far cleaner burning and more economical substitute in the form of methane. And there we've got several initiatives underway. Liquid fuel substitution for the vehicular market. There we've already had some very interesting results. We put our money where our mouth was. Aside from the Megabus operation, which has now successfully run, as we said, 800,000 kilometers with positive results, we've also converted our own fleets, and we've been running our own fleets on a system of combined gas and diesel, and the results have been incredibly promising, both from a maintenance perspective on the vehicle, as well as an overall cost perspective in running the vehicle. And then helium. Obviously, we've already touched on the helium side. We have a helium offtake agreement with Linde, and obviously the move from there is now to explore for additional sources and to increase capacity, with the ultimate objective of South Africa becoming a net exporter of helium, as opposed to our current situation, which is 100% importer of this valuable industrial gas. So the key features and why this is such a compelling investment business case is the first and only onshore petroleum production right, and we still have a tenure of 25 years remaining on the production right. We've got proven and probable reserves of around 100 billion cubic feet. To put 100 billion cubic feet in perspective, that is probably somewhere in the region of around 3 to 3.5 billion liters of diesel equivalent. So it's not an insignificant amount of energy that we've got in the free state. The origin of the gas is very unique. So we've done a significant amount of research in this field. And what is interesting about the type of gas is that unlike a traditional, conventional natural gas play or a coal bed methane play, where you're having to release adsorbed methane from the coal, what we have is a gas that is being produced biogenically underground. And as a result, our project has actually been classified as renewable. And the reason that it's renewable is that when you carbon date the gas, you see that the carbon dating shows radioisotopes of our lifespan as opposed to millions of years. And this is incredibly unique. So to elaborate on that process, we've got microbes living really, really deep underground. They're eating carbonaceous rock, and they're excreting methane, and that methane comes up to the surface via holes and fissures. The benefit of this means that our drilling process is also very, it's a very light form of drilling. It's innovative. It doesn't have a very big footprint. We use the same technology as you would to drill a plain water borehole. It's a 4-inch bore that goes down 350 meters. The minute that we hit one of these faults or fissures, we open up a channel and the gas comes to the surface. This not only means that our upstream costs are significantly lower than traditional oil and gas plays, but it also comes back to the fundamental philosophy of Renergen is about sustainability, and that's what made this asset so attractive. The quality of the gas is very high, and probably one of the main reasons for this is the nature of the origin of the gas. This gas comes from bacteria. Bacteria can only make methane. Bacteria cannot make higher alkane, so they can't make ethane, propane, butane, pentane. with the result that it becomes a very clean burning gas. Our gas contains in excess of 90% methane, and the balance is a concoction of helium and nitrogen, both inert, and neither will do any damage to anything that you put them into, whereas a more traditional natural gas contains higher alkanes, such as ethane, propane, butane, which have different flash points and could potentially lead towards damaging engines if you had to burn them in the wrong composition. We've got an exceptionally high helium content, ranging between 2 and 4%. The last well that we drilled was, in fact, 4%. And right now, our proven and probable helium reserve amounts to around 9.2 million kilograms of helium, which is not an insignificant amount of helium. We touched on the fact that it's a very low-cost producer, very low-pressure wells, and they have an extremely long lifespan. We've only done the modeling assuming that the wells last 15 years, but there's anecdotal evidence to show that our wells last significantly longer than that. We have now finalized, and this is quite another large milestone for us, we have now finalized our environmental impact assessment. This has been a two-year project which we've been working on, and we have now finally achieved the result where we have gone through public participation process and we've had no objections, which is quite a feat in the current state of play in South Africa. This environmental impact assessment is the last remaining hurdle that we have as a company before we can commence construction of the pipeline to reticulate the well. Now that we've completed this environmental impact assessment with no objections, we have submitted it to the PASA, and there is now a statutory holding period of 107 days in which the PASA will then make a recommendation and award us with a record of decision. And that record of decision is what then allows us to progress to the next level and then formally commence construction of the pipeline. So we're anticipating that given if we adhere to the 107-day timetable, that we'll probably get our ROD towards the end of July, first week of August. Hopefully sooner, given that there were no objections, but we're budgeting on that kind of timeline. In addition to what's going on in the Free State, we also have one additional right, and that's a right in Evander. These are exploration rights, and what makes them quite attractive is the fact that we already have gas coming out the ground. We could tomorrow put a compressor down and commence operations in a span of a matter of a few weeks, which is also a very, very big feather in our cap, and it's certainly not an asset which we have been very vocal about and haven't done any evaluations on it, but we can say that the data so far and the amount of gas coming out the ground is incredibly promising. Anecdotally, the composition of that gas is almost identical to the gas in the Free State, and that leads us to believe that somehow, somewhere underground, the two resources are linked. So just to recap on the announcement that we made in October 2016, which was the highlight from the Venman Deloitte report, which was done by Venman's Canadian oil and gas team. You can see from that table, using discount rate of the 10% mark on the proven, now bearing in mind that the discount rates are a factor of the associated risk with the project, i.e. the probability of bringing the project on stream, we're looking at a discount rate on the proved side of 10%, which gives you a valuation on just the P1, i.e. the gas in situ, the guaranteed gas in situ. We're sitting at a valuation of 3.875 billion rand. And on the probable, using a 20% discount, we're looking at a probable valuation of the additional gas of around a further 2.7 billion rand. So the combination of that gets us to the 6.6 billion or the 77 rand a share post-dilution of capex. Now the purpose for today's announcement is the fact that we have, after several months of working along with our new partners, the IDC, have achieved another major milestone in the company. And that milestone is the IDC having extended to Tetra 4 financing for the purposes of taking us from where we are now into full-scale production. The IDC has provided Tetra 4 with a loan amounting to 218 million rand. And the purpose for this loan is for the construction of the pipeline. And should we proceed with a power project, the loan will provide us with the necessary capital in order to put the power generation facilities in play for our client at their site. The term of the loan is 8 years. The final term for us to draw down is 2019, which gives us ample time in order to satisfy the conditions precedent which are incumbent in the loan. So those CPs include the EIA completion, which, as we announced today, the EIA has now been completed, so the only final outstanding point is the record of decision. There needs to be a final review of the geology, which is an ongoing process and something that we do as an upstream producer in any event. And then the final point is an equity contribution by Renogen into Tetra 4 of 145 million rand. And this, in essence, is the capital which the company is going to require, and we will most likely end up coming to the market, as we've said on multiple occasions, as and when the time is right, and when we are ready to deploy the capital, we will then be looking to shareholders and new investors for a capital raise in order for us to be able to draw down on this facility in order for Tetra 4 to then be taken into full-scale production. So, in conclusion, we've successfully completed phase one of the project, i.e. pilot phase, proof of concept, 800,000 kilometers, done. Completion of an uncontested environmental impact assessment. Again, another major milestone accomplished on time. We've secured financing for the pipeline, thanks to the IDC and their assistance, another major milestone accomplished. We're on track to implement phase two, which will see us increasing the gas that's currently available. And from there, obviously our main driver now is to deliver value to shareholders. And our objective is to get Renogen up to 77 rand a share. Thank you very much. We're open to questions.
Thank you. If anyone would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your touchtone phone. If you decide to withdraw the question, please press star and then two to remove yourself from the queue. If anyone would like to ask a question, please press star and then one. Our first question is from Terence Creamer of Engineering News.
Yes, hi Stefano, it's Terence Creamer here. Just on the record of decision and the process that you're going through there, you mentioned PASA, but I just wanted to understand there's other regulators, as I understand, in the space. PASA as well is being moved from DOE to DMR. I don't know if that's going to have any implications on timeframes. But there's also NERSA that I think regulates pipeline tariffs, but I don't know whether you would need to go through NERSA at all. And then there's the Department of Environmental Affairs. So I just want to understand the record of decision. Is it only PASA that you need a record of decision from, or do you need to get some regulatory approvals elsewhere? And then I just wanted to understand as well, secondly, the form of capital raising that you are contemplating. And if you could also just take us thirdly through the project components, once you get both the money, the loan from the IDC, as well as the capital injection from shareholders, what the actual project physically is going to entail. Thank you.
All right. I'll go through those points very often. With regards to the regulatory status, so your assumption of PASA being the only regulator that we're applying to is a correct one. So NEMA operates independently, but in our project, because we're upstream oil and gas, we make the application to PASA, involving NEMA to a certain extent and adhering to NEMA's rules. Once PASA approves it, they then give a recommendation to the DMR, and the DMR is the one that issues the final record of decision. NEMA specifically does not issue us with a record of decision. The record of decision is issued by the PASA, who makes the recommendation to the DMR for final approval. With regards to NERSA, we have all of our licenses in place with NERSA already. So we have storage, we have trading, That process has been undertaken, and so there's not much that we can do or that we require from NERSA from a trading of gas perspective. With regards to the pipeline, if you're specifically talking about regulation of a pipeline under the Pipe Gas Act, that act specifically only stipulates pipelines which carry gas at a pressure of above 2 bars. Now, given the very nature of our wells, as I alluded to in the presentation earlier, our wells are producing gas at a pressure of around 0.3 bar or 6 psi, which is very, very low pressure. And hence, the pipeline that we're running is going to be an incredibly low pressure reticulation network. And therefore, the pipeline itself is not regulated by NERSA. So we're covered from a regulatory perspective. Suffice it to say, we have an incredibly good relationship with all of these regulators, and we speak to them on an almost weekly basis. So it's a very collaborative affair. I think being the first production right onshore, everyone has a vested interest in making sure that everything goes according to plan. So we found all the regulators to be incredibly supportive. The second aspect to your question, if I recall properly, was how do we go about deploying the capital once we've raised it, and what are the milestones that we go through? Sorry, to paraphrase the question. So, obviously the first step is the construction of the pipeline. The construction of the pipeline moves us to a point where, as it stands today, we've got approximately 200 gigajoules available from the first well. Once we've connected all the additional wells, we're sitting at somewhere between 1,300 and 1,500 gigajoules a day. The additional work that we're embarking on now is to commence a large-scale drilling program, and that drilling program is to then bring us up to the point where we have significantly higher levels of gas coming online into that reticulation network, with the intention of us being at full-scale production probably within a 3 to 5 year time horizon. But by full-scale production, we're talking, I don't want to give exact numbers just yet, but let's just say that it would be significantly higher than the current 1,300 gigajoules available today. With regards to how we're going to roll out the gas production, obviously there's a major focus on the auto sector, and we're talking to several significant fleet operators based on the results that we've gotten from our gas in the Free State. And we're looking to implement some of those as soon as possible after the pipeline is complete. Power generation will be assessed on a case-by-case basis. We have several interested clients in the area that are very keen to become grid independent and like the idea of using one fuel source for two operations, i.e. giving them independence of not only the power grid, but also reducing their reliance on coal, which from a sustainability perspective improves their reporting. So we've got several initiatives underway. We'll obviously update the market once we've got something a little bit more concrete to announce. Then the final aspect of the rollout is again for specific users where they are currently either on LPG or on liquid fuels for thermal purposes, and we're talking to them about changing over gas, using gas instead. The timing on this, those are quite quick operations to convert. Again, nothing announceable at this stage. We're talking to several operators, but we foresee that we'll have quite a bit of traction before the pipeline is complete, let's put it that way. Construction of the pipeline, we're anticipating, if all things go according to plan, commencement of construction before the end of this year, and pipeline being operational before the end of the first half of next year. Again, there's a lot of ifs in that, and there are a lot of regulatory processes involved in that, but that's part and parcel of the nature of the business. With regards to the final aspect of your question, which relates to the raising of the capital from shareholders. As and when we are ready to begin deployment of the capital for the pipeline, We will then do a complete assessment along with our advisors of what the best course of action is. Is it going to be pure equity? Is it mezzanine? Who would offer us the best terms? So there's still a lot of work that needs to be done in that respect, and we're in no rush to come out to the market. We're not beggars, so we see ourselves in the chooser's camp, and we'll take what is the best offer for Renogen and for the shareholders.
Thanks. I just wanted to understand, you didn't mention the helium component at all. Is that not part of this phase at all?
The helium component, as we said in the announcement from May 2016, that is a very long lead item. The design work on the helium liquefier is quite an intense process. So we began full-scale front-end engineering design on the liquefier probably about 6 months ago. That is an ongoing process. Once we're happy with the specifications, we will then move into a construction phase on the liquefier. At this stage, we are still on track for the helium production to go online during the phase of 2019. But, you know, just to reiterate your point, without the pipeline, you can't bring the helium liquefier online. So we're definitely progressing with the helium project, but it was always going to be a very long lead item, simply because of the highly complex nature of the equipment that's required to separate helium from the gas source. But that project is completely on track, and we don't foresee any reason for delays in that project coming online with the original timetables that we had stipulated in the announcement of May 2016.
Okay. But the initial money that's coming in from the RDC is not to fund the helium aspect. That will come later.
Correct. That will come later, and we've already got plans in tow, but until we've got the final engineering diagram, we're not going to be able to put funding mechanisms in place just yet. So a lot of it depends on final engineering.
Okay, so there's a pipeline aspect to this, and I imagine what are the other components? Is there a storage component or compressor component? What else is part of this phase?
So this phase includes boosters, which will move the gas from the wellhead to a central processing facility. And the processing facility involves relatively simple equipment, which is included in this component. The first is a hydrovane, which boosts the pressure from a relatively low pressure up to around 5 bars. The hydrovane then forces the gas into a desiccant dryer, which for all intents and purposes, is quite similar to those little bags that you find in your shoes when you buy a pair of leather shoes, the little silica bags. It's just basically two big canisters filled with silica, and it removes the water from the gas tube. From the desiccant dryer, it then goes into a pressure reduction station, which then goes into the compressors, and the compressors then see the gas moved up to 250 bar. Storage, our entire storage network, unlike other gas companies, our storage network is actually the earth. So we only compress the gas as we need it, we put it into mobile storage units, and we move those to our client sites as they need it.
Great, thanks very much.
Thank you. Charlotte, I saw you had a question. Sorry, what do I do?
You can close the meeting,
Charlotte. Or you can speak and I can repeat the question.
No, we're good now.
Okay.
Just a few details on the pipeline. How much is it going to cost? How long is it going to be? And where is it going to go to? And what are you doing with your byproduct helium at the moment?
All very good questions. Thank you. So the cost is going to be a phased cost. The initial section of the pipeline amounts to 135 million rand, and that's to connect the existing wells. Following the drilling of additional wells, it's anticipated that the connection of those wells will amount to a further 50 million rand. To be clear, and back to Terence's point, these figures include the compression equipment. We consider the pipeline as being pipeline and compression all in one. Pardon me. The total length of the pipeline to connect these wells amounts to 107 kilometers. And all of that gas will be reticulated to one point, and that's to our facility, where we will be compressing gas. At this point in time, we have absolutely no plans to reticulate pipelines to clients or to municipalities. That's not our business model, and unless something changes in the next, let's call it 6 to 12 months, we've got absolutely no plans on the horizon to do anything like that. With regards to the helium, that's a very sad story. Until the liquefier is built, there is no way that we can separate it. So people are just getting incredibly light compressed natural gas. So, I mean, anecdotally, normal CNG probably weighs around 770 grams per normal cubic meter. Ours clocks in probably at just under 700 grams, and that's because the helium component makes our gas so light. But it's inert, it goes into the engine, it comes out the engine, does absolutely nothing. Any questions for our new partners, the IDC?
We have no further questions on the line.
Great. All right, well, I'd like to thank everyone once again for their time. Apologies for the initial little glitch, but I'm glad everyone persevered with us. And we're looking forward to updating the market with new and exciting news as we start to unpack and unfold this project. Thank you very much, everyone. And an especially big thank you to Tembisile and to Hilton. Really, really appreciate the effort. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.